part by a grant from the Brown Bag Deli Restaurant, homemade pies by Inge, Gourmet Foods, cards and gifts, as well as Creative Crafts, Zimmer Art Gallery, Wacky Nackies, the Bean Scene Cafe, and Prairie Fire Glass, all housed in the same buildings in downtown Monticello.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge, and we're glad to have you listening. We're also pleased to welcome back to this program the man that we like to call our chef in residence. This is a purely honorary title, ladies and gentlemen, but, you know, it means a lot to us, and he means a lot to us, because for a long time now, he has been stopping by in this program, Doyle Moore, and has been stopping by, and we talk about cooking, and we do these shows on the first Wednesday in the 10 o'clock hour. And we have done a lot of different topics. Sometimes we choose some particular dish to talk about, and the idea is we invite people to say, how do you make this thing? And if you have a secret that makes your version different from others, if you wouldn't mind, you know, to share the secret. And we've talked about cooking from different regions in the country and how they are different. We've talked about cooking different places around the world. And we always have a good time. And generally, what we focus on with the program is the food. It could be an ingredient. It could be a particular kind of dish. We've talked about bread and soup and vegetable dishes and chili and a lot of different sorts of things. But this morning we have a slightly different approach, and we're talking more, a little bit more about the equipment than the food, although the idea is how is it you use this thing that we want to talk about. Now, the way this thing works, the way this show works, see, a few days before the program, the phone rings and it's Doyle. And he says, well, what do you want to talk about? And then proceeds to tell me what he wants to talk about. And he says, the other day, he calls me last week, and he says, well, I just got this new pan, this new frying pan. And he said, well, maybe we could somehow do something with that. And I said, well, now you're scaring me now, because I had actually been thinking about the same thing, because on Valentine's Day, Mrs. Inge gave me a new cast iron skillet, great big cast iron skillet, because she knew that when we, you know, would go out and be in cooking stores, I'd be eyeing them, and I'd be thinking, well, now this would be pretty interesting to have one of these things and to think about what I could do in that and how that's different from, you know, we have a nonstick pan and we have some stainless pans, but, you know, cast iron's sort of a different animal. So here, Valentine's Day, she comes in with this enormous, extremely heavy package, and she says, here, happy Valentine's Day. So I open it up, and it's this big cast iron skillet. So I've been thinking about, well, okay, what I need to do is have somebody who can just tell me, you know, what kind of things you do with a skillet. So a doll calls up and says, well, I got this new pan. And so a show is born. The topic comes from that. So the very long explanation, what we thought we could talk about is the skillet, you know, skillet cookery. What's the secret to using these things to their best advantage? And particularly one thing I'm really curious about is pan sautéing fish. But there, you know, of course you could do in the skillet. Yeah, I know in the cast iron skillet you could do anything in that skillet. Oh, you could do in any skillet. You know, it's not such an exclusive device as long as it's, you know, properly seasoned and you know how to work with it. So that's what we'd like to do this morning. I'm interested in hearing about skillet cooking, particularly if there are people who use the cast iron cookware and could call in and say, well, yeah, I'll tell you what to do with that, and you could give me a little explanation. Now, Doyle, he may have some completely different agenda in mind. I don't know. So tell me about your new frying pan.
Well, in this particular case, it is a nonstick, and I wanted it to – I want to be able to fry fish. I have been frying fish wrong all my life. Mm-hmm. I hate it. And I love fried fish. So my feeling is, if other people can fry it and I like it and I can eat it, why can't I fry it? So that's the first thing. Well, my friend said, you have the wrong skillet. So we got a new skillet. Mm-hmm. But I have a set of three or four, probably even more than that, cast iron skillets. And they require a different kind of attention than other pans. So my first question to you is, did you season it?
Well, they claim that it came pre-seasoned. Now, I know how people feel about that.
I wouldn't believe them a second.
Yeah, that's what I would expect you and a lot of people to say, no. They may claim that it's pre-seasoned, but it's really not.
I want to know if you believe this, because I hardly believe this, but it is true. When you have a cast iron skillet and you heat it up, boy, this sounds like science fiction. When you heat it up, the metal expands and the molecules separate and oil gets in between them. And then as it cools, it closes back up. So here is an oil-trapped piece of metal. I find that so hard to believe. But that's the way it works.
Well, that's what I guess that's my understanding. Yes, you heat it, the pores in the metal actually open
up. And I don't believe that, but I'm trying hard to believe it.
Well, I know that, see, I do have and have used for a long time, I have a small cast iron skillet. It's shaped like a skillet, but it's made to make cornbread in. And it has little dividers in
it. Oh, yes.
So that what you get is little muffins, corn muffins, that are triangular in shape.
Oh, yes, yes.
And they're nice and crispy on all sides except the top. And my mother gave me this thing. And every time I use it, I think of her and I say, thank you very much, Mom, because it's a fabulous – we just love it. I love the way it works. So I know that much about cast iron, but that's all it does. It just does that one thing. And I know that people do use cast iron to make cornbread in and have for 200 years or something like that.
Well, pretty close.
So I guess I kind of – and this is – it did not come seasoned, and it took a long time. And at one point I sort of gave up on it, and then I came back to it. And now it's greasy and black and just the most disreputable-looking thing, and it's made my oven racks all greasy. But I love it. Because of what it does.
The second thing is after you have seasoned it, how do you take care of it? Because what you do not want to do is wash it in soap and water. Because the soap dissolves that grease that is in that metal and you end up with something that will rust and it will cause taste to occur and all kinds of other things. So this is another thing I wouldn't believe for a long time. You sprinkle salt. You can wipe out as much as you can wipe out with maybe a paper towel. And then you sprinkle salt in that. And then you use a paper towel and you literally scrub the surface of that with the salt. The salt picks up the excess grease and you end up with a completely dry, usable pan. I don't know what the ramifications of... sitting around with an unwashed pan. I don't know what that is. It doesn't seem to affect anything. But.
Well, this little one that I used the cornbread in, once I finally got that seasoned, I don't tell anybody, but I haven't washed it since.
You shouldn't, and you shouldn't.
I wipe if there's some little crumbs in there after it's done, I take a paper towel and just kind of wipe them out, and then I just put it away. And it seems to be
sprinkle, okay. Sprinkle salt on it because the salt scrubs off, actually acts as a scrubber. It doesn't. It isn't the chemical of the salt. It's a little
that's
scrubber.
Abrasive.
Yeah, yeah. And it wouldn't taste like cleansing powder. So that is what you want to do to take care of a cast iron skillet. Cast iron has been very, very, very big use in the late Victorian period, and especially in the West. The Dutch ovens and those skillets. I have a skillet about that big, and I have cooked for maybe 14 or 15 people, and it takes a skillet that big. And so I have used that. It was an old fraternity skillet that they were getting rid of, so I took it.
Well, I know I have heard about people doing things like going around to garage sales and yard sales and looking for used cast iron because it's I guess next to impossible to wear it out. and it can be, if it's even if it's old, it can be rehabilitated.
Oh, easily, yeah.
People would say that the cast iron now is not as good as, you know, that grandma had, or
I'm
not.
Maybe you know. I'm not sure, except that one. Except that grandma's would have been around a long time and would have been taken care of, and you would have had a product that was pleasant to use.
Okay. Well, we've been nattering here. And when I say we, I mean me, for a while. The telephone number, by the way, if you'd like to call in, 333-9455. We do also have toll-free line, good anywhere that you can hear us, 800-222-9455. Well, I'm interested now in hearing about frying fish.
Frying fish.
Now, you've been doing it, and you've been using a nonstick.
Why, look what I have here.
Looks to me like you have a bag of, I don't know, could it be cornmeal?
No, it's not.
Oh, it's not.
No, it is my new favorite product, whole wheat. Not red whole wheat.
White whole wheat flour.
And in this town, you can only buy it. I haven't found it everywhere. I know you can buy it at Meijer's. Mm-hmm. And there's only one brand, and that is King Arthur. And however, I get mine from Kansas.
You get yours right from King Arthur.
I get mine.
He rides up on the horse.
Exactly.
He says, "Here's your flour," and then goes.
I get mine from Kansas, from Hudson Cream, the mills in Kansas. Mm. Now I believe, but they won't say, except my sister saw King Arthur trucks at the Kansas mill. I asked the owner of the mill the other day, well, 2 months ago when I saw him. I said, "Do you grind the white wheat for?" "Oh no, we don't." But you see, that's the only thing I ask him. And the next question I should ask is, since white wheat is only grown in Kansas, how did those Vermont millers get the white wheat? And I think the answer is they came to this source and got the wheat, took it back, and milled it themselves. So I think that's what it is. I don't care. I mean, white wheat is a wonderful, wonderful new product. It's softer than the red wheat, and it cooks beautifully. So the matter of frying fish, well, I can't – of course I can talk as an authority. I've been frying fish now for almost 2 weeks. But every time I've done it, it has been right, and it has been what I wanted, and it made me mad that I was neglecting it. Now, my mother never say never and always avoid always. Mother very, very seldom ever fried fish. That's Midwest Kansas, Oklahoma. You just don't do that unless we went out on a fishing trip in the local creek and would get fish and frog legs, and then you clean them, and you have a 2 gallon jar of all that. You carry that home. Well, then you're going to have fish. I have no idea how she did it, but I think that somehow she must have involved flour.
Mm-hmm.
So what I found out is there is a technique, and then this is also crazy because when I look up the technique, it changes in the middle of what you're looking at as to what the technique is, but it's called Meunier, which means like the miller's wife. So you can get an idea there that it's going to be dredged in flour. And that tends to seal the fish and keep the moisture inside the fish and make a crispy crust on the outside, which is not something that I have ever gotten. And I grumble at the fact that my fish breaks and crackles and falls apart, and I can't. So that makes me mad. And all I would ever do is grumble. Well, the new technique I have, you can moisten it with almost anything. You could even moisten it with water if you had to. Milk is very, very good. Milk and egg is a very good moistening, and in just egg by itself. So you have a liquid that you put it in. I would put it in milk because what you want to do is you want two coatings of something on. Mm-hmm. The first coating is flour, and I have been using the whole wheat flour, and somehow it's nuttier and it doesn't lump up. It's really good. Then you have a second coating after you have dipped it maybe in an egg wash. I believe Emeril uses egg and water, and he stirs up the egg and water and then dips that second in that one. And I am going to start, I haven't done it yet, but I'm ready to, grind up Triscuits, because Triscuits are whole wheat, and grind them up to make the second coating. You use cracker crumbs, bread crumbs, panko. I was going to get you some panko this morning, but I didn't do that. But all of a sudden I thought, wait a minute, 100% whole wheat, because that's what I'm looking for, because being diabetic, the refined wheat changes to sugar so fast, but whole wheat manages to let me go. That's why I like the whole wheat flour. Hmm. So I'm going to grind that up and use that for the second coating. So what it is, some sort of liquid, milk, fine, then flour, fine, then into an egg wash, fine, then roll it up in something. I almost think also my potato chip.
I was thinking about potato chips.
My potato chip quest might be answered by this. Some people actually use whole instant potatoes flakes and fry that. You know, use that as a covering. And then when you fry it, you put it in about a little more than a quarter of an inch of oil. Now, it seems like a lot, but it doesn't soak up a lot, and you can reuse some oil if you.
Well, then it is one of the things that definitely I'm thinking about. I know that you have to have oil, but I'd like to try and hold down the fat that ends up in the dish.
All right, you do that by putting all this coating on. The coating instantly seals everything off, and it doesn't soak up the fat. Uh-huh. And that I was very surprised at. It really does work, and so what you want is a medium to not high, don't have it smoking, but don't keep it just real low, and so you want a nice hearty fire, and then also cook it quickly, so that 2.5 minutes on a side is you know, it isn't something you put in and you go off and 15 minutes later you come back, so it only takes about 2.5 minutes, because 5 minutes on a whole piece that is less than a half inch thick, a little fillet that you have is really good.
Okay. Well, I'm telling you, it will work.
And you will say, why is something that simple so hard to ever get a hold of? And one of the reasons is we're not in the Midwest that much of a fish eating culture. Everybody comes here. And we can get fish from everywhere now, but they're all cooking it the way they learned on the East Coast, on the West Coast, in the South, and all that sort of thing. And they're all specialized techniques for the fish that they have there.
The man here is the guy we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. He stops by once a month, almost on the first Wednesday of the month, the 10 o'clock hour. We talk about cooking. And we're both here curious to hear about your skillet experiences, whether you're a nonstick person or a cast iron person, or you would say, well, it depends on what you're doing.
It depends on what you're doing.
You can give us a call, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. And here's someone who has been very patient waiting to talk with
us.
Yes,
thank you. Thank you for patience.
Savoy, line one. Hello.
Hi. No problem. I've been enjoying listening about frying the fish. I was familiar with the Meuniere, but I was interested to hear how you described it. And I definitely recommend panko, having lived in Japan.
Yes.
If that's the stuff. And I was delighted to see that they sell it here.
You can get it here now, yes.
Yeah, and they even have whole wheat panko, which is really nice, too. I tend towards a nonstick because in all the fine cooking magazines and in cooks and stuff, they always say use nonstick.
Yes, they do.
And so I'm always looking for a nice nonstick, the best kind of nonstick and utensils that aren't going to mess up my nonstick. And, I recently bought a sort of a round all-purpose skillet, you know, one of those newfangled wok wok-shaped all-purpose skillets.
In a
hard anodized aluminum with evidently some special coating, nonstick coating, but it wasn't Teflon. It was supposed to be like infused or something like that. I guess the idea is that it wouldn't scrape off so much. And I bought some plastic utensils to use on it. Supposedly these are utensils you use for nonstick.
Right.
But that thing is all scratched up already, and I don't know what's going on. And I recently read in Cook's that if you want to really preserve your nonstick, you need to use silicone instruments. And I looked at some spatulas, but those things are really thick. You know, they're not thin so that you can slide it. It seems like because silicone is so soft, it would be floppy if it was thin. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So what to do? Is my coating coming off?
And well, you're scratching into it, so you've got something that's digging into the coating is what's taking it off.
Is it really digging in, or is it normal? Is it because it's infused? Is it just
No. Layer? I think that you're destroying the surface. Well, because it's not supposed to, it's hard to find a wooden one. Wood works quite well.
Oh, wood?
Yeah.
You recommend
wood? Yeah, but I don't know if there are any turners or lifters. Emeril has a little lifter that is curved just a bit, so it doesn't scrape along the bottom. It lifts under the food, and then you flip it over. I just saw that a couple of nights ago, but it looked to me like it was metal all the way. But he said this is such a light touch that doesn't seem to scratch it off. I know what you're thinking about, and I don't know whether it was the wrong finish or that it wasn't incorporated with the metal well enough, which is a matter of style. Mm-hmm. There is something called Silverstone, I think, and that's supposed to be very, very good. Then there's a Circulon that has little grooves in the bottom, and that doesn't wear off quite so much.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, I'm sorry that happened to you, because you expect it that it's going to work quite well.
Okay. Well, I have another question.
Yes.
I have lots of questions.
Good.
But if I were to use let's say, hard anodized aluminum that wasn't coated, it looks like that stuff scratches, and they say it's so hard that it's okay to use, but I worry about aluminum leaching into my food. But yet when I use these hard anodized, you can see scratches and stuff on them.
Yeah.
Is it leaching?
Yeah. No, that again is you're destroying the surface with something that's scratching it.
So do you need to use special utensils with the
I think
Teflon
so.
Type
I think so. Oh, yes, even with Teflon.
Calphalon, I was saying.
Calphalon. Yeah. Calphalon. I guess by coincidence, I do use something special. I guess that's because I threw the other two away so that I don't have to worry about that. But, yes, Calphalon is very good, but I think that Calphalon even makes a pancake turner that you can get. That they may it may be more compatible. It is a puzzle, isn't it?
Can I ask you a couple of questions?
Sure.
About cooking techniques?
Sure.
How do you sear something? What does it mean to sear? And how can you sear something and still fully cook it? Because my idea is that you cook it really fast on the outside. So how do you know it's cooked all the way on the inside?
Oh, you cook it longer.
Yeah,
you cook it longer. I mean, searing is the technique of sealing the outside surface. Now, for a long time, they said it wasn't necessary to sear beef if you're making a stew. But now, all of a sudden, they've switched back to the fact that searing it is a very good thing because it keeps the juices inside the meat and it doesn't get out that little crust. So you want the searing to be done early and thoroughly, but then you have to cook the meat for another longer period of time. But searing it is you sear it on all the sides, and then you go ahead and braise it or roast it however you want.
Is searing different from browning?
No.
Okay.
That's exactly what you're doing is browning. But you want it brown. You don't want it just heated.
Right.
You know.
You want it crusty, right?
Yes. Yes. You want it crusty. Yeah.
Okay. And do you do that on a high flame or a medium-high flame? Or
medium high, because if you get it too high, it'll make it too crisp, and you'll end up with little hard knots of meat. I mean, if you're trying to brown, for example, hamburger or something, it wants to be done slowly and thoroughly. Mm-hmm. And if you brown it too fast, it gets hard, and it'll never soften up. Even if you boiled it for another 6 hours, it would never soften up. Huh. So you want to take it easy because it isn't. Although rapid on some of the things, when it only takes just a few. Seconds or a minute or so to brown a roast, so it, and you keep turning it every minute or so. It can be a little hotter then because that's a great big piece of meat and not a small piece, not tiny texture.
I see. Okay. Well, thank you. This
sure.
is really useful. Appreciate
All right.
your help.
Thanks for the call. Let's Bye. Go on here. I think we have somebody on line number four. Our toll-free line. Hello.
Hello. I just stepped out of the room at the beginning, and I wondered if you could repeat the seasoning procedure, and that's the thing I was really interested in.
Yes, of the cast iron.
Yeah,
yeah, because you don't need to season. You just need to wash the nonsticks. For cast iron, I would wash it so that it's clean of shop dust and whatever. It would have been there, but it's clean. And then heat the pan, and then when it's not hot, but when it begins to get warm, then put in some oil and just the lightest film of oil that you can have. You don't need a quarter of an inch, and then bring that up to a very hot temperature, almost smoking. Not quite smoking because it makes a mess in the house. And then turn the fire off and let it cool and let everything come back to normal. Then wipe the oil out. And as I say, in order to get all of the oil, after you sort of wipe out the excess oil or pour it out, put salt. An eighth of a cup, you know. Just
okay,
that's the part
I've heard that.
A couple of tablespoons,
yeah, and I've heard that part.
Yeah, sprinkle that in, and then wipe that with the paper, and then that will get the rest of the residue of the oil out, and that's all you have to do. Then just put it away, and what you do then is that you never wash it with soap. You can wash it with water. You can put it under water, and you can scrub it with Teflon. Dobie brush, isn't it?
Yeah,
Dobie.
Yeah.
And that's a Teflon, like Chore Boy used to be, only it was copper, and it'll take out crumbs and things like that, and it won't scratch the surface. But don't put any soap in that, and so keep it clean with water is all.
Yeah. Sorry, I'm laughing. David announced what they were going to do before the news. I had to get on because a long time ago I helped my grandmother.
Oh, yes.
And when she was doing something in another part of the house, and I decided the breakfast dishes needed to be cleaned.
Oh, yep.
I did her favorite, I don't remember, it had a heart shape in the handle, cast iron griddle pan.
Yes.
And I washed it very diligently with, you know, detergent.
Yes, of course. It was nice and clean when you got done.
And presented it to her.
She cried.
You know, well, it,
she should
cried,
have.
But my grandfather didn't.
Oh.
And, you know, it was the old, back to the, behind the garage.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I never had anything to do with cast iron since. And just recently, I remember you mentioned them, people purchasing them, especially in garage sales, but the prices over where I am in Indiana have just skyrocket.
Oh, isn't it awful?
It's just incredible. I mean, you know, if you can, you know, you start talking about trading your car in for it and stuff. Like
you're
that.
Right. I'm what? Fond of buying cast iron Dutch ovens and kettles.
Yeah.
I do that a lot. I cook an awful lot in Dutch ovens. I have 3 Dutch ovens here and 3 of them in. I guess I cook with a battery of 6 Dutch ovens.
Secondly, I just wondered when you also spent some time talking about how you do the shows. You mentioned, I think you said you were diabetic, and
yes.
I wondered if you've ever done a show for cooking for diabetics.
Not in a long time, but
okay.
I think that would be probably a smart thing to do because there are more and more advances, and what I do is mainly avoid the foods that quickly turn to sugar.
And those are the
white refined flour and white rice and white bread.
Okay, well, thanks a lot.
Sure.
Okay, well, thanks for the call. We are into already our second half, a little bit
Goodness.
Past the midpoint, with the man we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore, and he's been stopping by here for a long time. First Wednesday of the month, talk about cooking. And we always have fun when he is here exchanging stories and cooking tips and recipes. And this time around, the topic was a little odd because we both, when we talked the other day, started to enthuse about new skillets. And so we said, well, maybe we can make a program out of that. So we're interested in skillet cookery, and particularly me. I was just interested in, you know, anybody who had anything to say about cast iron because I just – got us a present. I got a new cast iron, big cast iron skillet the other day, and I haven't done anything with it yet. So maybe this weekend I'll have to try a little.
Well, now when you fry that fish,
mm-hmm.
Put in mm-hmm. about 1/4 inch of oil.
Okay.
Now we were talking about that. And you said, well, you want to cut down on the oil. Now if everything is right, it'll just seal that off, and you'll have a lot of oil left in the pan. It won't soak up into the food, and that is the credit to this Meunier manner of moistening, putting flour on first. In fact, Emeril put on cornstarch. He dipped it in cornstarch. Something. I don't know, chicken. Mm-hmm. I think he did some chicken. He dipped them in cornstarch, then in egg, then in panko. So. All of the things that I read, I think it's a matter of your taste or of your comfort with what you're doing. But you mix it, you start with something moist and then something very light and dry, then something a little heavier moist and then something a little heavier. And some folks like to chop up herbs and parsley. And put that in the crumbs at the end,
mm-hmm.
and that is quite wonderful. And then you see, you don't have to stop with fish; you keep going through lamb chops and goods like that. But you fry them carefully, and what you're going to get is sealed in crust and moist inside.
Okay. Well, let's talk with have somebody here in Urbana. Let's get them right here. Line one. Hello.
Howdy.
Hi.
I just had a couple comments. You mentioned grinding up Triscuits for that final
yes.
layer, and it reminded me of something I used to love, my mother used to do, which was to grind up Kellogg's cornflakes.
Cornflakes. And yeah, cornflakes are used as a this. I've not done that, but cornflakes would work.
She mainly used it in the oven for bake things in the oven, but I imagine...
She was doing her own shake and bake way back then.
Before shake and bake.
Yes,
yeah. Yeah.
Yes. Well, that's where it came from.
And a couple other comments to make. One was I'm a fan of cast iron as well, but I've discovered that if you let Le Creuset put a porcelain coating on it, it's really fantastic. So Le Creuset is really a great surface. For,
yes, it is.
It's that porcelain coating is a
yes,
terrific nonstick surface.
It is.
And it's pretty... I mean, we don't use metal utensils in it, but it certainly doesn't ding up like a lot of the other synthetic surfaces.
That is a very valuable, and for a long time it's been around, and it has never gotten better because it was perfect to begin with.
Yeah, you got to pay for it, though. Just
you
like
do,
you
pay, for
about,
you do
things,
pay for it. You do pay for
it, but it lasts a long time. Last thing is, I don't know if you're familiar with Hal McGee's On Food and Cooking books. The most recent edition, well, the 20-year, I think, revised edition finally just came out, and he pretty much debunked the idea of sealing in juices by searing meat in that book. His book was just reviewed in either Science or Nature, I know. So this is sort of scientific examination of that tradition of sealing in juices in meat by searing it, and I think he's pretty much demonstrated that's a nice practice, but it doesn't work the way people think it works.
I agree with you because everyone keeps flip-flopping during one period of time it's all that's the way to do it, and another period of time it doesn't make any difference whether you do that or not. And I think probably it is like I was describing, certain meats want to be done quickly and fast, and certain ones want to be done slowly, so that you don't toughen the meat or make it in not tough, but make it into hard, unedible chunks. I think that you might be selective about what you want to do that with. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
I do know that they both have been in fashion and out of fashion, and I haven't got the last word on it. But most recently, I think that they're going back to browning. I think it looks better. I think that that's what it is. It's eye appeal, and I believe that's 90% of the satisfaction of that, because it looks cooked and it looks comfortable and tasty. And sometimes if you don't do that, you end up with something that ends up more steamed and kind of boiled looking and a little bit tired. And
right, the crispy on the outside,
yes,
soft on the inside,
yes,
I feel. Yeah, that's true.
And I think that that's just eye appeal more than taste, because I've read those things where they say it doesn't make any difference whether you do that or not. Well, there you go.
All right. Well, thanks a lot.
Sure.
Thanks. Well, I guess I would be of the mind that the browning does affect the flavor that you do, that browning to the outside, you do get a different taste with that sort of, with the
but
browning.
But if the guy that wrote the book says no, I don't know what you say.
you say potato and I say potato.
That's right.
Do whatever you want.
Now, something I'm going to go real quick into not another subject, but the skillet I use only for this kind of frying. My piece of equipment that I use and I have used for, oh my gok, 40 years at least, is a wok, and I do all of that stir fry mannerism. Almost anything that I cook is done in the wok. It isn't really all stir fry, but I like using that large surface and mm-hmm. then scraping things up from the bottom. So 90% of my cooking is in a wok.
Hmm.
And then the frying, I wouldn't fry in a wok because it's too small in the bottom. And so this new big, oh boy, I can put a whole fillet and it goes from edge to edge.
Want to talk with some other folks?
Sure.
All right. We'll go to Chicago. Line 4. Hello.
Hello. I have a comment and a question. If you do a show on diabetic cooking,
yes,
there's a really wonderful book. It's called Eat Away Diabetes.
Uh-huh.
And unfortunately, I don't remember the author's name. It was published like in the last 4 or 5 years. But it's a very solid nutritional introduction and then recipes. And she believes with her diet that you can eat. For people with type 2 diabetes,
yes,
you can either reduce your medication, and for some people, they can actually go off. And I know people who have eaten similar to what she is recommending, and they have been able to reduce their medication. So that might be one book you want to look at.
That I will pay attention to that. I do find that I can adjust my sugar by my diet. I do know I can do that.
Mm-hmm.
But then if I go and eat at someone's house, I'm not going to be, oh, I can't do that. No, I don't pig out on it, but I don't ignore what they have prepared for me.
Yeah. Well, that hemoglobin A1C test basically says it's an average, so they're taking into account that some
That's
days
right.
you're going to pig
That's
out.
Right. And, yeah. and it does happen.
Yeah.
And but I've got it back. Yeah. Got it back to where it's supposed to be right now, so
Good.
Keep
for
working
you.
On it.
Good. I have a my question is my great-grandmother used to make bread on a skillet. And this isn't cornbread. And my mother, unfortunately, cannot remember the recipe or the technique because she actually used to flip it in the pan to cook the other side. And she can't remember the recipe. This was a biscuit. And it sounds to me like this was probably the original fast food, the days when they really didn't have time to make biscuits. They did this biscuit in the skillet.
Oh, you mean like a fried biscuit then?
It's like one big biscuit,
fried biscuit.
You took out and then cut. And so if you have the recipe, if you know anyone else who has the recipe, I would really like it.
I think that you've solved the problem anyway. I think it probably is a best biscuit recipe. I have to ask, where was she from?
Alabama.
Ah, yes. Okay. Self-rising flour.
So just use self-rising.
Self-rising flour and make the biscuits out of self-rising flour. And then it's going to raise up while you're cooking it. And there are fried biscuits, and that's very Southern, a fried biscuit. But those are generally cut out. But I should think that, yes, you could make this great big I don't know what the name of this thing was. I can see it in my mind, and I think you're absolutely right that it would be fried, and then you could flip it over or turn it over, however you would want to do that, and then fry the other side. And it would be quicker. Fried biscuits don't take nearly as long as a baked biscuit. So it could be a matter of speeding up. I make a little tiny Welch cake that is really nothing more than a biscuit that is fried, but the size of it is the size of a shot glass.
Oh.
You know, it's tiny, and it has a lot of currants in it. And I fry those, and you have to get them just right on either side, and then they're good for many, many days. So a fried biscuit is a pretty easy thing to do. I don't think it takes a special recipe because there's not much of a variation between a biscuit and a biscuit. It's the technique that you're working with.
So just to take any biscuit recipe,
sure,
but use self-rising flour.
Sure, but I would use self-rising flour.
Okay, thank you.
You bet.
All right, thank you. Well, let's see. We got some other people here, and we'll go next to, let me see, someone in Danforth, line number two. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I'm glad you're having this show today. I always enjoy them. I had three questions, and then just now I think I have what the lady that was previous to my call.
Yes.
My mother called it campfire bread.
Okay.
And I think she probably used an iron skillet, and it was quite thin. She rolled the biscuits and patted them down till they were pretty large, and then she fried it on one side and flipped it over, and then we had them with butter and jam or jelly.
Oh, yeah.
But I'm thinking that...
You know, that does sound like cowboy stuff, doesn't it? Yep.
My original question, though, was, what kind of fish is best for pan frying?
Oh, all right. I have an answer to that. This is a dumb answer, but it has worked so far. Because, again, not being right at a fishmonger right where they come out of the water, you don't know what you got. I rely on the people who are behind the counter in this town. Mm-hmm. And I go in and I say, what is your freshest fish that I can fry? Oh. So then they fuss, and then I do get the freshest, best fish. It has once been catfish. It has once been tilapia. And it has once been the perch.
Ocean perch.
Yeah, those in my great scope of fishery, those are the first three. But I trusted the person because they gave
fine,
me the freshest fish. And I think that is another of the great problems, because I have come across some fish that I don't even want to think about eating after I've smelled it and it's cooking, and it's just like, I don't like fish if it's going to be that. Well, the fresh fish, and they'll do it. So each of the clerks has been very kind to say, oh, no, this is the one you want for today.
Very good.
And then I would ask them on which one is frying. And my feeling is you can do a whole fish, like a trout would be very, very good, but it takes a little longer to cook. And but fillets, anything that is a fillet would be quite fine, because it only takes about 5 minutes to cook the whole thing.
Good.
So you want a thin fillet of fish.
All right. Now, I have two other questions.
Sure.
Do you add any kind of spice or flavoring in that coating?
I think I would put in Herb de Provence would be really good with to give a nice flavor to it, and I think that probably an Italian herb mix would be very good to it. But a single one, I'm not so sure.
My son likes to cook, and I asked him about it, and he said dry mustard, paprika, salt, and pepper.
Oh, well, there you are. There you're getting very spicy and not. Flavory, you're getting nice and spicy. That would be very good because the mustard would be very good with the fish. Yeah.
The third question.
Yes.
The odor of frying fish.
Yes.
How do you get rid of it? Or
you buy fresh fish.
Okay.
Honestly, I think that is the answer. You buy fresh fish. Emerald yesterday said, "I don't know where you buy your fish, but I always smell my fish." And so he makes an issue.
Oh, I see. Sniff it.
Sniff it.
Before you buy it.
Yes, sniff it before you buy it. And he says they'll all have to let you do that. And what you want is a fish that is not full of odor. But ask them for the freshest fish they've got that you can fry.
Good.
And I think that you'll probably be well taken care of.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Sure.
All right, thank you. Let's go to next, Urbana. Line one. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
I have developed a real flavor longing for Outback coconut shrimp with a marmalade sauce.
Oh, my.
And the sauce is spicy, but you can tell they started out with a good marmalade because it has, you know, the chunks of zest in there.
Oh, yes.
And it's very spicy. And the coconut shrimp aren't heavily covered with anything, so they're not real crusty. But it's just out of this world. And I wondered if anybody had any idea what they put in either the coating for the shrimp or for the marmalade sauce.
I don't know. I haven't had that dish prepared by those folk.
Maybe somebody will call in. I'll keep listening.
It might be. Okay. However, I finally found it. I've been hunting for Rose's marmalade, and which I think is the best. I think it's even better than Keeler. Rose's marmalade, and I finally found it at Schnucks. There's the marmalade, and there's a key lime marmalade.
Oh.
And those are from a long, long, long time ago. I remember those being available in the 50s, and then I lost track of it and couldn't find it. And I finally found them the other day.
Okay.
So that would be a good start because that is one of the best marmalades I know.
Okay, good. Thanks a lot.
All right.
Bye.
And thank you. Let's go to line number 3, and this caller is in Champaign. Hello.
Hi. Have you ever tried graham flour? They make it up out of yellow split peas as a, you know, a
Are
flour.
You sure? Isn't gram, G-R-A-M?
Yeah.
That's chickpeas.
Well, I don't know. I've seen it on the label where it's supposed to be yellow split peas. I'm not sure. Maybe they got different varieties. It's great stuff, though.
It's
mixed up with instant pancake mix.
Yes.
And use that as a crust for the fish. You can use different liquids, too.
Yes, and they make quite a bit of difference. The gram is the Hindi word for ground chickpea flour, but I don't know. And then gram, G-R-A-H, Graham,
like Graham
crackers. Yeah. It comes from a man's name, Graham, and I don't know what that particular flour is, but what you get is something that all flowers are not alike. They all respond to heat in a different manner. And what you have to learn is which one you're using and do some practicing as to whether you do it hot and fast or warm and slow or if it has to have other things added to it like a bat made into a batter rather than use dry. That all is going to affect what you're doing, and there isn't a guide. It's just knowing that this will vary. So,
Okay. We're almost out of time. Is there any last sort of thing?
Oh, let's just keep going for another hour. I don't care.
Well, I do have another guest coming.
Maybe he wants to know about frying fish, too.
So I'm interested. Maybe we should think about you going with the caller's suggestion about perhaps talking about cooking and diabetes.
Yes.
Maybe that would be a good thing to talk about.
Yes, we can do that very easy.
Because I know, as you said, I know you've experimented with this, and there are other people who do feel that if you do limit your intake of starchy stuff, basically, and that can sound a little, you know, if you like potatoes and pasta and rice.
White starchy.
Oh, okay.
White
starchy.
So this that's why I've jumped
to the whole wheat.
Okay. It doesn't seem to affect. And you can buy whole wheat pasta now, mm-hmm. and it's really, some of it is really, really tasty.
So you can eat things like, you could eat brown rice and.
Oh yes, brown rice, Tex Mahdi rice is fine, and it doesn't affect your. Huh. I mean, it isn't the same effect as the white stuff.
Well, we got to go.
All right,
he'll be back next month. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
man, we'd like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore, once a month, first Wednesday at 10 o'clock hour. We talk about cooking, and we always have a great time. This show, by the way, Focus 580, is made possible in part by a grant from the Brown Bag Deli Restaurant, Homemade Pies by Inge, Gourmet Foods, Cards and Gifts, as well as Creative Crafts, Zimmer Art Gallery, Wacky Nackies, the Bean Scene Cafe, and Prairie Fire Glass, all housed in the same buildings in downtown Monticello. The broadcast today is also made possible with support from the Corkscrew Wine and Emporium in Urbana. With the theme of interesting wines for interesting times, the Corkscrew is hosting a tasting this Saturday, March 5th, from 2 to 6 of wines from South Africa, featuring everything from Chenin Blanc to Syrah. Information is available at 337-7704 or go to their website, that is thecorkscrew.com. A little bit later today, as part of the Afternoon Magazine, Celeste Quinn will be talking with poet Sujiqua Kim. Her first collection of poems, Notes from the Divided Country, has been published to great acclaim. Among the honors, it has received the 2002 Walt Whitman Award. She will be with Celeste. We'll be reading some of her work and talking about it. And, of course, your questions will be welcome. That's part of the Afternoon Magazine. The show itself gets underway at noon Central Time with news from NPR, the BBC, AM 580, and then the interview in the 1 o'clock hour. Celeste Quinn is the host for the program. Coming up in the next hour of this show, we'll be talking with a physician, an Italian doctor. His name is Gino Strada. He is a surgeon, and he is also one of the founders of an Italian humanitarian society called Emergency that for 10 years now has been providing medical care on an emergency basis and also rehabilitation for civilian victims of war in many places around the world, including Afghanistan and Iraq. He'll talk with us about his experiences next. First, though, we'll take a break for news and update on the markets, so please stay tuned.
The Carl Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety is proud to underwrite agricultural programming on WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
It's 10:59. I'm Tom Rogers with this market update. Up across the board on the Board of Trade, March wheat is at $3.35 at the moment, up 5 cents.